Quick warning before we get into the celebrations. There can be some swear words and adult concepts in these episodes, so make sure there's no kids around and maybe pop on some headphones. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Rights for Women Book Launch Podcast. I'm Pamela Cook, author, podcaster, and writing coach and mentor. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is a story about an orphan child, a lifelong friendship, and an impossible promise, now available at online retailers and through my website at pamelacook.com.au.
And I'm Kel from Rights for Women, the other half. I'm a podcaster and want-to-be author. My business is Listen Up Podcasting, and we make podcasts for a positive world, like this one. You can find me at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or catch me on Facebook or Twitter.
As many of you will know, with the advent of coronavirus and lockdowns, authors with new releases have been unable to promote their books at live events. Here at Rights for Women, we want to help authors celebrate their new releases and help readers discover new books, all of which are available online at retailers and through independent bookstores. We'll be releasing these mini-sode chats with authors regularly throughout the coming months while we're all in isolation and authors need a place to launch their books.
Please share the love by letting your reading friends know about the podcast and the books on social media and by reviewing any books you read to help authors get the word out. This is a great time to put some new books on your shelf, virtual and physical, and to share the gift of reading.
Hello, my name's Hedy Ashwin, and I've just written a sequel to my humorous memoir. It's called Living It Up in France. This is chapter one of Living It Up in France. And we were at it again, scheming our way into travel, renovations, and a love of good wine. Not that we needed any coaxing in regard to wine, but after renovating a boat for more years than I care to remember, I was a bit over the painting, the sanding, and the visits to the hardware store. We thought we were so clever, two Australians who decided to buy a house in France. We sat back in our little house in Brittany, the paperwork completed, the bank happy, our vocabulary expanding, and contemplated all the things we were going to do. Our to-do list grew and grew and grew. Three lifetimes mightn't be enough, and we only had one, and that was getting to its sell-by date. What we didn't want to do was easy. I don't want to do much of the house, just small renovations, I said, as I tried to shut the old window in the kitchen and use the pull-up, push-down, give-it-a-shove technique. I'm not keen on a lot of gardening, Boomy, my husband, said as we scraped mud from his shoes. We could go somewhere. It sounded like a fine idea. After all, this is why we came to France in the first place, to go places, see things, and just, well, enjoy life. How hard can it be? And so we pulled out our trusty old map. It had been folded, concertinaed, spread out, poured over, and I could almost hear it sigh as once again we looked for adventure, little post-it notes at the ready. But first, Boomy said, we should get ourselves organised. I put the kettle on, bought out a cake and settled in for the afternoon. No, I mean, make a list of the things we must do, then the things we should do, then the things we want to do. Oh, I was already planning what hats to take and how many changes of underwear. There you go, Kel.
I love it, Hedy. I was so that when you stopped, I actually got shocked. It was like listening to a really good audiobook.
I've had quite a bit of experience in radio and people say I've got a good voice. So I was going to do both of them, but it is a lot of work. So I'm thinking of doing that. Yeah, audio both the books.
I just, after listening to you, and I could just imagine being on a road trip, listening to that with someone in the car, having a great time. Something that you could get lost in. And just so you know, I'm currently sitting under a quilt right now. So
well, there you go. I used to sit in the cupboard with all my clothes all around me and it was dark and I'd have a torch, you know. Like.
I know, it's home studio 101, isn't it? I
think. Yeah, and your kids say, Mum, what are you doing in there?
I never knew all that creativity as a child would come in so handy as a career. So
that's right.
Let's get to your book, though. So you have said that in the opening that this is the sequel. So why don't you sort of quickly take us through the beginning so that we can talk about this book now.
Okay. Well, first of all, I must say that I'm 60 years old now. So we'd lived on a boat in far north Queensland for 16 years all up. And when we first went to France, it was like 4 years before that. So we thought to ourselves, we want to retire somewhere when we can't get our leg over the boat anymore because, you know, getting in the dinghy, starting the engine, you know, sailing, it's all that's fun. But when you get old, it sort of hurts a bit more. You know, so we were looking around the world where we would like to retire, and we thought of in Malaysia, they have this thing called a grey hair policy where if you have X amount of dollars in the bank, you can stay there and you don't get boating rights, but they let you stay there as long as you like, you know. But we'd been in the tropics for a long time, and we both have skin cancers and all those nasty things. So we wanted to go somewhere where it was cooler, where we could wear something more than a T-shirt and shorts for, you know. And so we narrowed it down, and you just go to Google and you put in cheap houses in the world or something, and it kept coming up with Brittany in France. And we both like travel and we both like history a lot. And every time I put in cheap houses in France, cheap houses in northern France, cheap houses in Brittany, all these little villages came up because we had to sell our boat and we didn't have a house and that's all we had. And we had a bit of money in the bank. So we found these houses, and what I did, as I explained in the first book, if you want to live in France, for an Australian, you need a visa. You need a temporary visa to live there, and the paperwork is enormous. Like, France is a socialist country, right? So everyone has a job. And so whether that lady's job is to take your paper to the office across the hallway or put a stamp on it, the paper has to go through like 8, 9, 10 people to get what you want. And we wanted that visa. So we had to fly from Port Douglas down to Sydney to go to the French consulate. And then at the last minute, because everything stops for lunch, it was 12:30, and they were shutting for lunch. And then the lady at the consulate says, well, you know, you have to get this signed by a JP. And we're like, what? So we're running through Sydney like bank robbers to get this thing signed. But anyway, we got all our documents, and I had a list of 17 houses. I made all the appointments with all the real estate agents over there. We hired a car, and for 17 days we did 4,000 kilometres, had heaps of houses to look at. I took the iPad and all that, and then we came back and said, well, we didn't like any of them.
Oh, no.
But then we were lying on the bed in the boat, and where we do our best thinking, and we said, well, why don't we just go for it? Let's go for the dead woman's house, because we had like little names for every different house so we could, you know, categorise them. So we bought the dead woman's house, and then we decided to move what stuff we did have off the boat and over to France, and we lived there for 4 years. Yeah.
Wow. And that's
so we saw the boat for about, we saw the house for about 20 minutes, and we couldn't get downstairs because the real estate agent didn't have the key. But of course, my writer mind, I'm like, oh, she died in the house, and you know, there's blood on the floor, and you know, like I'm imagining all these scenarios. And then once we lived there, we found their graves, the people that used to live in the house. We cleaned the house and found a 25-year-old bottle of rum.
Wow.
You know, and just terrific stuff, you know, real tresor, real treasure. Well, we had a clock on the wall, and the lady was called Bernadette and her husband was called Louis. And Bernadette died when she was 93. Apparently the neighbour said she was feisty. Anyway, this clock, we called it Bernadette because, you know, at 2 a.m. it would chime 13 times, and then, you know, you'd just be coming in the door and it'd go ding, 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 ding. and then stop. And we both look at the clock and go, Bernadette, you know, like, oh, it was really weird. Yeah. So that's like the first book. We went from the boat to the house. And after being on a boat for 16 years, you know, we didn't have much stuff. We had no furniture, but luckily Bernadette's family left some furniture. So that was good. Yeah. And we found a lot of things. Like we found all these old, old photos under the bed. I found coins from the war and before the war, 1934, in the backyard. I collect fountain pens and I found an old ink bottle, you know, in the garden and everything.
So the second book, mm-hmm. this one is when you decide to do all the renovating and make all the changes, is that right?
Yeah, we've done the renovating, some of it, and we finish up in the second book, but we decide to go and have a lot of fun. So we bought a big motorbike, an FJR 1300, a Yamaha, with panniers, and we travelled right across France to Verdun. We went to Belgium. We went to all the Gothic cathedrals. I bought a book on the internet called Gothic Cathedrals of France. So we took that around and saw all those things. We saw the Somme and just travelled across France on a motorbike and enjoyed ourselves, yeah.
So when did you know or when did you decide this is going to be a book, this is going to be a story?
People kept asking us a lot of questions. And so I thought, well, you know, every time I answered, it embellished it a little, you know. And, so I thought I better write it down. And as I was writing it, it was such fun because all my pictures gave me clues and hints on, you know, where we went and who we saw. And when you travel, it's the people that make the trip, really. I mean, you can see the cathedral, but it's the man sitting down there that you talk to that had been going to the cathedral, you know, since he was 6 years old and stuff like that, you know. And so I thought, well, if I write it all down, I won't forget it because I'm getting on, you know, and other people would enjoy it too, yeah.
Did your radio background help you with choosing? Because the tone is very farcical. Did your radio background inspire the way you chose to write the book?
No, that Kel, that is my humorous bent. It's the way I write. I have other humorous novels. I've written like 19 books, and all my humour is it comes from a childhood of watching things like Gilligan's Island, I Love Lucy, and reading P.G. Wodehouse and all those types of books. And so I have this dry, wry, quirky way of looking at things and writing them down. So although my radio background makes me have a brevity in what I say and how I say it, because, you know, you can't waffle on like I'm doing here. But, yeah, it can gels everything together, yeah. Mm.
So have you always wanted to be a writer then? Because you haven't just, you don't just write humour as well. We were talking just before this started about one of your books that's speculative fiction.
Yes.
So you write across genres. You draw on fiction and non-fiction.
Yeah.
What's
the I always had pen pals, right? Since I was like a brownie and 7 years old, we'd have pen pals, brownie pen pals in England and stuff like that, and we'd write letters. So I've always loved writing things, stories, letters, and I'm a terrible, terrible stationery tragic. Like my husband won't let me alone in office work. So I have to be chaperoned. And I collect fountain pens and I love stationery and all those types of things. So it's like a match made in heaven. And I used to write little stories for my kids and make up stories with their names in them and that sort of thing. And then when we lived on a boat, I took a correspondence course. I got it out of a newspaper. That was sort of when the internet was in its infancy. And I did this correspondence course on freelance journalism. So I used to write magazine articles for boating magazines. And then after that, I tried short stories and read heaps of stuff on how to write a short story and grammar and all that sort of thing, and won some competitions, and that sort of spurred me on to write my first humorous novel. So I suppose I've always been a writer because I had pen pals, and when you write a letter, it's just a story really, isn't it? Yeah.
So in your writing, talk to me about writing between those different genres. That's got to be a different process for you in the way you think and the way you express yourself and the way you visualize your story. So this one is humor drawn from your life, an expression yes. of your travel journal in a humorous way almost. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, you know, fictional books that are humorous. Then yep. you've got speculative fiction books.
Yeah, and short stories. And literary novellas, yeah.
So talk about, I'd love to know how you manage to write across so many genres in so many different formats, where that comes from in you and what the differences are.
Well, I am an avid reader, so I read eclectically. I read everything. I deconstruct the books and then I think, well, I could do something like that. And speculative fiction, I like reading. And I've always wanted to write a trilogy in the vein of a big idea, like Ayn Rand's big idea of individualism and the way it works in the whole world, but a world you can still understand, which is speculative fiction. So I've written one of my trilogy about mathematics and pi and all those sorts of things. And then my short stories, I was down the rabbit hole of the internet looking at photographs and on Trove, and I saw these photographs of far north Queensland back in the war years. And then I found a little snippet about a travelling magistrate. So I wrote a short story book called A Shilling on the Bar about a travelling magistrate in 1944 who goes to far north Queensland. And then I found out there was a travelling magistrate, and it was his first foray up north since before the war, since 39. So I incorporated everything I found in the old newspapers and made fictional stories around an incident, like a man gets struck by lightning and a woman gets shot in the bar and stuff like that. And then my humour, well, I love writing humour, but that takes a lot of plotting. So because you've got to get the jokes right, you know, and you have to surprise the reader and sort of jolly them along and all that sort of thing. I think it's one of the hardest things to write is humour, to get it right, you know. People laugh a lot with my books and stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you find with this latest book or the pair of books that a big part of the humour comes from the displacement of yourself and your husband, who are two Australians from the tropics, going to European countryside in France, going from a boat to a house? Is that displacement a huge part of the comedy that takes place?
Absolutely, yeah. And just the way people do things, yeah, the displacement and like a fish out of water, really, because we'd come from this boat and we have a house with, you know, things and furniture and French language, and we're just like plopped there and
culture
have
shock
to deal with this. Yeah. Yeah. Real culture shock.
What does your husband think about putting this out for all to see and laugh at?
We just have a laugh about it. So, you know, he doesn't mind at all, you know. When I had a market stall and I was selling all my books at the market stall, he used to sit behind me and help with the stall. And if I had to go to the toilet, he'd sell a book for me and stuff like that. We're in it together. So, yeah, we're just a team. Team Ashwin, high five.
You'd have to be, I think, with something like this. You could only do it with good humour, right? So... I think this is a fantastic spot to tell people where they can go and get the book and where they can find out more about you and all of your books, please, Hetty.
Okay, well, I'm on Amazon, so all you've got to do is put my name in the search, Hetty Ashwin, and all my books will come up. I do have, they're on Barnes & Noble and all those other places online, but I've just made a whole series of, they're called pocket editions of my books. Now, if you remember the Penguin books with the orange and cream,
yes.
You know, they've got the two bands, well, mine are blue and cream. Channeling that same cover. So they don't have anything fancy on the front, but they're a little bit cheaper than the ones with the fancy covers. And you can get those, you just have to order them from a bookshop because I'm a self-published author, so I publish through Amazon. But my pocket editions are published through Ingram Sparks, which means that they're in bookshops. So you just go to your bookshop if you want a pocket edition. They're a little bit smaller than the bigger editions and a little bit cheaper. And so you can get them anywhere, really.
What inspired you around doing the little versions? Because I actually haven't heard of another author doing that.
Well, when you self-publish on Amazon, they can give you an ISBN. But luckily, when I was in France, because I was living there, I was considered like regular and ordinary. I applied to the French ISBN people. You know, like it's Bowker in the US and wherever. So I applied to the French version of that, and they gave me ISBNs. So I thought, they gave me 5. I wonder if they'll give me 10. Oh, they gave me 10. I wonder if they'll give me 10 more. And I actually got about 35 for free.
Wow.
Because I lived there. So with those 35 free ISBNs, I decided to do my pocket editions. So instead of a 12-point font, which is easy for everybody to read, there are 10.5.
Yeah.
And they're one step down from the smallest book that you can get. I suppose they're about the same size as the palm of your hand, and you buy them at supermarkets everywhere. And I thought, that is a really good idea. NASA brought out all these pictures of Jupiter, and they were colorized by I can't remember his name now. Anyway, they were colorized and they're all blue and nice and that. So I went in with my InDesign program, because I make all my covers, and I picked a little section. So that's actually Jupiter on the cover of the pocket editions. Yeah.
Oh, there's something really cool about that. I love that you did that. What a creative thing to do.
Yeah.
Wow.
I like making all my own covers. I like being creative. And the other thing I do, Kel, is when I'm plotting that book, I knit. So I sit there with a slack jaw, almost dribbling, and just knit and think, you know, what's she going to do? And it's a real sort of
meditative.
Meditative. Yeah, that's the right word. Yeah.
You have to go trance-like in the creative process sometimes. But I'd like to ask you to recommend another female Australian author, if you can.
Absolutely. Well, I was thinking about this, and my friend Jackie Parry, she lived on a boat too, and we went and visited her in France when she had one of those big long barges, and she's written a couple of adventure books. She likes adventure like us, like me. So one is called Of Foreign Build, and it's all about boating, how she lost her first husband. And found her second one, and he took her on a boat around the world. And then the other one's called This Is It, and it's the two hemispheres and a boat and travelling and everything. And then Jackie got a couple, she's a horsey woman, and she got some horses and travelled around Australia with horses and a tent with her new husband. So, yeah, she's got a real can-do attitude. Jackie Parry, everybody. It's a terrific books, really easy to read and so full of adventure.
Where can people go to find your column and your radio?
I have on my blog, if you look up Hetty Ashwin Pen to Paper, there's a little thing at the top where you click on it and it will go to the Slippery Grip column, and there are some as audio and there are some as the written word.
Everybody, check it out. And while you're there, go and buy the books.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time today.
That's all right.
It's been a pleasure. And
yes, it's been good fun.
Thank you for listening to The Book Launch and supporting our authors. If you like what you hear, check us out at rightsforwomen.com, where you can find all our regular episodes and our new book launch episodes, and help us help authors by supporting us at Patreon for just a few dollars each month. You can find out more about all of this on our website.
And don't forget to subscribe to Rights for Women wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, can you please give us a quick rating and review so other people can find us and these awesome books that authors are launching in isolation right now?
Happy reading.
This podcast episode was recorded, produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.